Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome. We are going to talk today about transportation, and many of you who are listening to this program take the bus a lot. Take the bus around the city of Baltimore, take the bus all around the metro area, take the bus to work, take it to school. Take it because that's your mode of transportation, and we hear lots of stories about folks who are forced to take the bus, and now there's a new bus in town, and that bus is called the Circulator, and there are a lot of questions people have about the Circulator, and whether this is a piece of transportation our city that is for all of us. Is it just to snub the MTA because they can't get the job done? Is it a bus for just tourists? And some people are arguing, as one of our guests would, that this is an idea that we should expand, that should be a bus for us all that actually connects to something that we all can use and go further. Robert Ehrlich and Martin O'Malley have very different ideas about the future of transportation. The governor... Governor O'Malley wants to build more rail, wants to build the Purple Line, wants to build the Red Line in the D.C. suburbs and Baltimore, respectively. And Governor Robert Ehrlich says we need smart buses, not trains, and we can't afford the trains. So let's hear your thoughts about that. And the Red Line, one of the things I talked about before we went on the air with one of our guests, is we have this Red Line. The question is, where does it go? Why is it being built? Does it connect with anything that we need? But it will make things go across town much faster. And are we using the Red Line as a development tool, or is this actually supposed to be helping people get from one place to the next? And then there's a question of race and the Red Line that I bring up a great deal, which is people were saying the Red Line should be built under the ground rather than above the ground. Well, it always seems to happen this way. Maybe it wasn't by design, and maybe it's just an accident. But the neighborhood's being disrupted are on the west side of town, which are mostly African-American neighborhoods, and the mostly up-and-coming wealthy white neighborhoods on the east side are the ones that get the train to go underground, not to disrupt their neighborhoods. And what is that about? We'll cover that one as well. If we build rail, will the customers come? That's another question. And Mark, could it be better? I'm not talking about me. I could be better, too. I'm talking about the train. And we're going to talk about that as well. So join us here with your thoughts and ideas and comments and questions at 410-319-8888. We have in the studio right now with us Gerald Neely, who's a creator of the Baltimore Interspace website, which is a really interesting website about this entire issue. He's a former transportation planner for the Baltimore Department of Planning. I guess now he's in exile. If they talked to him or not, they might. Gerald, good to have you on the show. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
Christopher Field is in the studio. He is president of the Transit Riders Action Council of Metropolitan Baltimore, is an expert on what happens around town, but especially on the MARC, and has been around the media talking about the disasters on the MARC and what they mean. And Christopher, good to have you in the studio with us.
Well, thank you very much.
We are also joined by phone. Otis Raleigh is with us. He's senior manager at the Urban Policy Development, a consulting firm, and former president of the Central Maryland Transportation Alliance. Otis, always great to have you with us as well.
Good to be here, Mark.
And soon we'll be joined by Dan Pontius, who is a citizen transportation advocate and former executive director of the Citizens Planning and Housing Association. Join us here at 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888. All right, gentlemen. let's talk. The two big things that are on people's mind, I think, are the MARC and the Circulator. And I'm curious what our listeners think about both those things. If you take the MARC, your experience is at 410-319-8888, and the Circulator. You could be standing on the corner waiting for your MTA bus on Charles Street, and all of a sudden this other beautiful, gleaming new bus comes around that doesn't emit nasty, noxious odors and actually is free. So which one do you take and why? So you've been writing a great deal, Gerald Neely, about the Circulator.
Right. The Circulator would have never been done if people were happy with the way the MTA was running the transit system. It's basically Baltimore City saying, we're going to go into the transit business, we're going to spend our money on transit because we're not happy with the job that the MTA is doing.
What aspect of that are you talking about in all seriousness?
It's just a matter of having a service that caters to people not going a very long distance. And the way the MTA runs their system, for example, fares, you pay the exact same fare, $1.60, whether you go two blocks or 20 miles. And that just doesn't make economic sense. So one of the things that the city did when they came up with the Charm City Circulator is they said, okay, we're going to make it free because it just isn't worth the trouble of charging fares, and we want to get rid of that inhibition that the MTA has put in the way of short-distance ridership.
In the long run, though, you can't run a system without charging some fares.
Good question. The city seems to think that you can. They've budgeted $8 million a year for at least the first 5 years to run this. I don't know whether they've thought about it any farther in the future than that. They actually are saying that this is a good way of spending the very rare taxpayers' dollars, and despite the fact that they're raising taxes in the city to pay for it as well, and despite the fact that they're getting bus service from the state that they don't have to pay for at all.
So what do our taxpayers think about that? 410-319-8888, you're paying for the circulator. Do you use it? Who uses it? Should it be free? What do you think? 410-319-8888. Otis Raleigh.
Yeah, Mark, I do want to say, I think we have to realize, though, that the circulator, MTA service, all of these things are being paid for with tax dollars. I thought pretty smart on the city's side as it relates to financing the circulator was to charge an increase in the parking tax, primarily at the garages, that would fund the circulator. So it's whether it's your roads that you're traveling on your cars, whether it's the MTA buses, whether it's the circulator, none of these things are quote unquote free. They're all paid for with tax dollars, and the myth that the $1.60 that we put into the fare boxes is ever going to pay for transit is foolishness. And so since at least the city kind of came to the conclusion that it was foolishness, and that that this is a real service that helps to helps to increase economic development, helps to support its citizenry as well as the tourist industry, which is the number two industry in the city, why not use your tax dollars to invest instead of just spend? And I think it makes a lot of sense. And I would agree with what Jerry said. It was a bit of a slap in the face to MTA because if the bus service was where it should be, the circulator would not be necessary. But I take my hat off to the city. For getting back in the game. We complained often about the transit system, and they would say, okay, well, how much is the city putting in directly? And we couldn't really respond to that. And so we're in the game, and I think we're in it for the right reasons and doing the right thing.
It's important to realize that
Christopher Field.
Transportation or transit is a service that's provided by government. And like the police, which don't pay for themselves, the fire department, which doesn't pay for itself, I imagine trash collection doesn't pay for itself. We don't expect these things to pay for themselves, and yet we expect these services to be delivered. We do expect to get around the region, and the roads don't pay for themselves completely. A lot of that's subsidized out of taxes, and the transit is paid for in part by taxes. And the decision as to whether you ask for a fare box recovery, that is the riders to pay some of it or just provide it for free, is a political decision, and there are many places where the government does provide it for free. Denver has a bus that runs through the center of Denver. I think it's the 16th Street something or other that is completely free. You just hop on, you go down, and you get off.
I've been on that bus. When I covered the Democratic National Convention, that bus was – I remember that bus.
And it runs very frequently, and I've ridden it also. It's quite something just to get on. And
but it's another bus that – we do these free buses, it seems. It's another bus that seems to have been built – and I'll just throw this out, and you can all disagree with this, and when Otis, we just lost, he's going to come right back, we're going to get him on a landline, is that it's another bus, it seems, that is built for tourists, not for citizens, though citizens use it. Denver's the same way. That's a bus in downtown because that's where you go to, where they want to attract the tourist industry, correct?
The Denver system really works in as an integral system.
Integral to the entire system.
Yes, integral to the entire system.
Which ours is not.
Yes. The bus mall in Denver, the free buses are the only buses that run on that line. There are transit hubs to transfer to the regional bus system at either end of the free circulator. The whole thing is run by a regional authority, a tax-raising authority, all under the same auspices. You do not have two separate governmental entities competing with each other like you have with the Charm City Circulator.
I want to define for our listeners, though. I'm only interrupting, Joe, because I want to define what you were saying here. Then we're going to open the phones at 410-319-8888. Your thoughts on the circulator, the mark, and the rest of our transportation system. Michael Johnson, the first caller up, 410-319-8888. But what you said was that this was a metropolitan-wide in Denver.
Yes.
Authority that can raise taxes?
Up to a certain level. I mean, they have statutory ability to do it.
Now, Otis, what was said as you were switching phones, what I said was that after Christopher Field raised the issue of the free bus in Denver that goes through town, Gerald Neely commented that this is a bus that actually functions with the rest of the system that connects to other buses you can transfer to in that system beyond the free system. My comment that started that conversation off was that this is a system built for tourists, not for regular citizens. And you can comment on all that, Otis.
Well, I would have to disagree because you know I've used the circulator. I'm not a tourist. I live in Baltimore. I work in Baltimore. I worship in Baltimore. And you know I think it is for both. There are a lot of citizens that are using circulator right now, and it does connect you. It connects you, you know, to the mark. It connects the stops at Penn Station. It connects. It makes some of those, I think, vital connections. So I think it has a dual function, and just as any good transit system would, is that it's going to serve the people who you know who live there as well as people who are visiting. And the reality is that you know prior to this, tourists would not get on the bus system in Baltimore. I had a concierge at one of the hotels when I was with the city talk to me about that, about how frustrating it was that they have to always put these people in taxis, that you know they can't tell them to go on the bus line, and that's no longer a reality. So I think it's to both advantage of both the citizens as well as tourists, and I couldn't agree more with Chris. We have to really rethink how we look at you know the transit system in terms of looking at it as a service like the library, like police service, like fire service, that this isn't something that we are going to pay for through fares. It's our tax dollars at work, and we should demand more. And even as we're doing the circulator, I think you know organizations like you know CPHA and CMTA, the Urban League, and others who are trying to push MTA to be better. And I think they're trying, but they have to try harder. And I think the circulator will help to push them and shame them to some extent to do a better job.
Yeah, the problem with the circulator is it's just another transit service that has been plopped down, superimposed on top of all the other transit services that we already have. The solution is to come up with an integrated system, not to just plop down new services on top of all the existing services.
And I do want to talk about that. I'm going to move to the mark in a moment and some other issues as well. But let me open the phone to 410-319-8888. I want to hear your thoughts on the circulator, on how you use and don't use our public transportation system and why, your experiences on the buses, your experiences on the mark. We had some discussions about the mark before we went on the air in the green room. We're going to raise some of those issues. And the issues of the red line, you know, what I said about the red line, I'll say again, which is that it seems the red line is an important facet to our transportation system. Is it constructed with that in mind, in terms of actually getting us more than from point A to point B, east to west, but connecting with the rest of our system? Does it actually do that? Will people use it if it's built? And B, C, finally, why does it always seem as if the neighborhoods that are disrupted are African American neighborhoods and not the mostly white neighborhoods that get the thing that go under the ground as opposed to smack dab down the middle of your street? 410-319-8888. Dan Pontius, former executive director of the Citizens Planning and Housing Association, and for as long as I've known, he's been a citizen transportation advocate. He's now with us in the studio. Good to have you, Dan.
Great, nice to be here.
Gerald Neely is here in the studio, creator of the Baltimore Interspace website, a former transportation planner for the Baltimore Department of Planning. Christopher Field, president of the Transit Riders Action Council of Metropolitan Baltimore, and Otis Raleigh, a senior manager at Urban Policy Development, a consulting firm, and former president of the Central Maryland Transportation Alliance, and you, the riders and citizens, at 410-319-8888. Michael Johnson, you're on the air. Hi, Michael, you're on the air.
Okay, good evening, everyone.
Hey,
how are we doing? Fine. And then Otis and the rest of my good friend Otis Rawlings and the rest that are there. I mean, you got some heavy hitters. But, you know, I think that Mr. Rawlings also kind of answered his own question when he was saying that the concierge says that, you know, you couldn't even get tourists to ride, and now they are riding. And that's a good thing for the tourists. But that's, the circulator is the biggest joke when it comes to people who truly ride the bus. I mean, we're not taking the bus, and we're starting at Holland's Market on the west side, but we're not taking the so-called free bus and taking elderly people or people in the community to a supermarket where you can actually, because it's such a food desert over here in West Baltimore, where we only have one supermarket. And it's not serving the people who can afford the $1.65 or the $1.60 are the people who are riding for free. Because if you look at the economic development between where it picks up, where it drops off, how it swings over to the train station, it's not picking, and I've ridden it many times as an experiment, me and a few other people, community activists, and very few people from the city are riding it. And as a matter of fact, very few people are riding it at all. But the thing is that this is not serving the people who couldn't afford to afford $1.60 all the time, or walking, the walking poor who are walking to work. And for somebody to ride the MART train, and I know you want to get on that, ride the MART train probably once or twice a week, you know, sometimes it's good and sometimes it's very, 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 very bad. But, I mean, you know, for the so-called circulator, come on, it's a joke. Let's not pretend like folks in the communities are actually using it, because it doesn't go as many places, and I would say 5% of the places where the community even is going. So I appreciate that you having all these expertise, and I know a lot of the folks that are on there have their heart in it. But for someone that does use the MTA and uses the circular and uses the MART train, we're light years behind many of the major cities and towns that I've been in.
Michael Johnson, you raised some really critical issues. Otis, I'd like your response since he talked to you first, and I'll bring Dan into the conversation after that.
Well, I don't think we necessarily disagree on some of the issues. I think the point that you're raising is that the current system is inadequate in terms of serving the majority of Baltimore. We all agree. I think everyone in the studio agrees, and I think city officials agree with that. But I think where I fundamentally disagree with you is that I think the circulator does provide service both to Baltimoreans as well as to tourists. And I think what the long-term solution, and I believe Jerry raised this point, the long-term solution has to be a solution that really overall fixes the transit system, that does create a system that's integrated. But just as we've started the city through the Enoch Pratt Library is kind of doing groceries at their branches, just as is, you know, kind of urban farming that is trying to solve some of the issues in the reality of our ability to get a gun easier in our neighborhoods than a tomato. But that, you know, that overall system has to be fixed. But we are trying to resolve some of those issues even as we work towards fixing that overall problem within our neighborhoods. And I think the same applies with the transportation issue. We should be doing things like the red line. We should be doing things like the circulator and not waiting till the overall system is fixed, because then we will all be out of luck.
Dan?
Well, and I think also hopefully we're going to have more and more choices in Baltimore as we move forward. And I think the circulator is another choice. It's paid for by a parking tax. So you're only paying for it really if you park downtown, and you know, then you're paying for the spaces that are basically funding the circulator. And so people are going to have different choices. I mean, a friend of my son's who goes to his middle school and lives in Union Square, he's looking forward to, you know, he's using the circulator to get around. So I think there are some people who are doing that, and we're going to have choices, hopefully choices in terms of food too. I mean, there are folks around the West Baltimore MARC station who have been working on transportation, but then now they also have a farmer's market going on the West Baltimore MARC parking lot, working with CPHA and other and with the city and with the MTA. So I think there are ways as we move forward to kind of get at a lot of these things by expanding choices in a lot of different ways.
Let me ask before you this question. I want to get our listeners to think about this as well at 410-319-8888 and answer this question for us as well, since you drive your cars, use the buses, use the trains, use the subway, use the light rail. So let's for argument's sake say the red line, the circulator, are steps in the right direction, moving our why already have one of my guests, General Neely, saying no, but let's say, I'm going to throw this out and you can say no and why, is moving in the right direction that we're building it. But the question is, why does it always seem that when we do these things, that they are kind of thrown out there? I mean, the circulator and all those other in the trolley, things are bubbled up from the bottom from the citizenry in many ways, as did the red line. That was being pushed by people beyond the system itself. But it seems like when they happen, they're kind of, as you put it, plopped down, not connected, not a piece of really thinking through this system. And we have an election coming up for governor, and then we have an election coming up for mayor. And it seems to me transportation should be a key discussion here about what we want. But rather, are we just plopping down?
I think the answer is yes. I think that people,
somebody
who gets a vision and they say, oh, this is what we need. And they plop it down, whether it be the circulator or the red line. And there may be some efforts to justify it in the context of things. But I don't really feel that there's been a comprehensive thought about how going in the rail direction, for example, freight and passenger rail, commuter rail, local transit rail, the buses interact. The number of times that I've been on the light rail riding towards Annapolis and watched the 14 pull away from the Patapsco station just as the light rail arrives shows that the system is not one system. It's not an integrated system. And it's incredibly frustrating. I didn't make that connection, but it still frustrates me to watch the 14 drive away just as the light rail's arriving. And the whole system operates like that. And I think it's because there have been there's a sense that this is my vision and this is what I want to do, this little piece here. And whether it's for political gain or because this is my job and that's not my job, I don't know.
If I could just jump in, because
Dan Pontius.
There are certainly ways MTA can improve their service. I mean, that is certainly the case. I mean, we've seen it in the paper. You know, there are things that need to happen for MTA's service to
improve. We should say that you're a public transportation man. You take the bus.
I took the bus this morning. I took the bus the 11 southbound, and it arrived the minute it was supposed to. I mean, but for that experience for me this morning, the bus, it was right there exactly when it said it was going to be there. So I understand there are needs to improve service, but as people have said, there are people who ride the bus all the time and really rely on it. But also, I just want to – the idea that the red line was plopped down, I mean, this I was at the meetings in 2003 when they started the planning for the red line. I mean, it's not – like this is just something that's appeared in the last 2 years. There were meetings in 2003, meetings in 2004. When I was at CPHA in 2005, we took 30-some people on trips to other cities, including Denver, where we rode the free downtown, you know, the bus, which came every 5 minutes. I mean, we got to see sort of operational things in other cities. The city sponsored and Otis at CMTA and CPHA sponsored in 2008 another follow-up set of trips. I mean, a lot of people have experienced other cities. A lot of people are involved in the planning of this. There's a whole compact where the city has agreed to do certain things. MTA has agreed to do certain things. It is going to integrate with the MARC. There's going to be a big hub at the West Baltimore MARC station, and a lot of the communities around there that have been looking for investment have been organized into the West Baltimore MARC TUD and Transportation Committee, and are really working with that so there's a lot of stuff going on, and there are a lot of things that are going to connect with the red line as it's planned now.
Now before we go to Otis, let me let Gerald be while he's shaking his head no, then we'll go to you and T in Baltimore City and Frederick in Baltimore County. Please hold on. We want to get to your thoughts. We'll let our guests kind of comment on this last piece, and we'll open the phones back up again.
Okay, we've been doing serious rail transit planning since the 1960s. And it started as a very integrated plan, similar to Atlanta or Washington, D.C., or the BART system in San Francisco, all heavy rail, all connecting with totally integrated stations. Then in the 90s, I think, is when things started falling apart because the MTA had realized
that what it had done was just not successful. The light rail had been built way under budget. They had to do it single track. The heavy rail, they extended it only to Hopkins Hospital, and they knew right from the beginning that was just not the right place to end it. It was the only major rail transit line in the world that I know of that does not terminate at a hub where people can feed in on various buses. The MTA had pretty much put up their hands. You know, they had pretty much given up. Their only plan up until after that was a loop of light rail around downtown, which everybody thought was a great idea at the time, except me. But I think everybody realized as soon as they started doing more planning that it was a fiasco in the making. And so fortunately that was dashed. But then the plan that came up with it instead was basically they turned it over to the communities and the business people, who came up with sort of a connect the dots exercise, which is what they did. And that's basically where the red line came up. Red line was something that really wasn't part of any of the planning up until that point, but it just was plopped down, I guess we can use that word, out of whole cloth. And it really doesn't relate to anything that was built before. And it's not even going to connect to the subway. It's going to be two blocks away.
Otis, and then Dan, I'll let you kind of – Dan looks quizzical and doesn't seem to agree, so we'll come to Dan's thoughts on that. But Otis, go ahead.
Mark, I'm a planner by training. Some of my best friends are planners. I love plans. but the reality is we do not need any more planning. Jerry is correct that there was in this part of it, some of the planning that was done in the late 50s or the 60s matched some of the other major cities in the country. But the failure did not come from a lack of a plan, nor did the failure come just in the 90s. The failure was real a lack of leadership. And as we transition our conversation towards the mark and towards Governor Ehrlich and Governor O'Malley, that's where the real issue is. It is an issue of leadership making a determination that that integrated transportation system is what matters. And yes, some of the stuff has been to kind of fill in the gap. They have been a lack of an overall system has caused us to say, okay, well, let's meet this need and this need instead of doing what is necessary. But in order for us to do what is necessary, we need leadership. And when CMTA, Central Maryland Transportation Alliance, did a session in Denver with some of the county executives, the mayor, some of the state senators and delegates, we tried to show them that this is a system that works, not just because there is integrated, but because they did the different loops and the different spurs of the system simultaneously. They were planning to do it simultaneously so that, when you're doing the red and the yellow and the blue all at the same time, then Howard County and Anne Arundel County and Baltimore City and Baltimore County all want to play and all feel engaged and feel excited about it because they see something coming in their lifetime as opposed to dreaming the impossible dream for our great-grandchildren. And so I think if we're going to be serious about this conversation, we have to be serious in terms of holding everyone accountable, particularly public policy officials who have the power of the purse. And I think if we're going to push them, we need to really push right now while we're in the election cycle and try to get what I think will be crucial to the economic health of the region and of the state.
We have to take a short break, and I do apologize to my listeners because many of you have called in and have left because you're getting frustrated. You can't get through with all our guests. We're going to come right back to your calls when we return from this very brief break. T, you're the first caller up at 410-319-8888. So stay with us here. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by Johns Hopkins Medicine. Find out more at www.hopkinsmedicine.org. Number again, 410-319-8888. Your thoughts on the Mark Train, on your experiences with our transportation system, and what you'd like to see our transportation system be under the next governor and under the next mayor, whoever that person may be. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. We have a hot and rolling conversation, no pun intended, about transportation in our community. Joining me in studio is Christopher Field, who's president of the Transit Riders Action Council of Metropolitan Baltimore. Gerald Neely, creator of Baltimore Inner Space website. You can log on to that by going to steinershow.org right now and attaching to it. He's former transportation planner for the Department, Baltimore Department of Planning. Dan Pontius is with us, who's a citizen transportation advocate and former executive director of Citizens Planning and Housing Association. And joining us by phone is Otis Rawley, who's senior manager at Urban Policy Development, a consulting firm, and former president of the Central Maryland Transportation Alliance and former head of our planning department here in the city of Baltimore. 410-319-8888. I will tell the truth and go right to the phones. And T, you're on the air.
Hi, Mark. How are you?
I'm well, T. Welcome.
Good. I'm calling about the MARC train.
Okay.
I've been commuting to D.C. for the past 30 years. 15 years I drove down the crowded 295 Parkway. And until you have done that for 15 years, you will never be able to really appreciate the MARC train. I like the MARC train, but since the government has given us more transit subsidies, the ridership has increased. They've given us new trains that, in my opinion, aren't worth a damn. They break down constantly when the weather is hot, and all the hoopla about the trains this year is a joke. This has been happening for the past 5 years. This is not the first time the trains have been broken down and we have been stranded with no air and no water. It just so happened that somebody decided to call the news this time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know what we can do to fix these trains. I drove to last week because I got stuck on a train. I drove from my house here in Edmondson Village to Greenbelt every day and caught the Metro to work on the Red Line. I would love it if I could live long enough to see something like D.C.'s transportation system here in Baltimore.
Amen to that.
It is awesome. I use it all the time. If I have to go places at work, I go to the shopping, I go to the dentist in D.C., I catch the Metro. It's a wonderful thing, but I just don't see the one that they're proposing in Baltimore to be like that.
I think you raise some very important issues, and I agree completely. I mean, about getting to D.C., and I never drive to D.C. anymore unless you have to go to Georgetown because they didn't want the rail to come there. But other than that, you can get anywhere you need to in Washington, D.C. But let's talk about the MARC first. I mean, and Christopher Field, this is your bailiwick.
Yes, I've been riding the MARC train since 1993 or 1994. And the fact that I've been able to commute to work on the MARC train has meant that from about that time, my wife and I have only had one car, which, of course, has saved us a great deal of money. Now, I'm an electrical engineer, and riding the train back and forth, there's a lot of time sitting there, and I began to wonder some things, and I got some numbers from the MTA and from the State Highway Administration, and the MARC train, between 6 o'clock and 8 o'clock in the morning, is operating at 113 or so percent of seating capacity at its peak load. Now, what that means is that you have almost one standee per row on the MARC train. Now, the MARC train also, between 6 and 8, is carrying 20% of the traffic southbound in the I-95-295 corridor. It's very popular with commuters because driving into Washington is such a nuisance. Driving on the parkway, on the Beltway, Baltimore-Washington Parkway is a pain and a very unpleasant experience. And so the thing I ask myself is what could be done to attract more people to the MARC train? And obviously it's not limited by demand. It's limited by capacity. And you need to be able to have more seats on the train. And that would mean more cars and longer trains, but it's capacity constrained, and it takes a lot of investment to expand that. And unfortunately, the MARC riders, I think, have always been on the periphery of thought as opposed to the central of thought. Oh, we need to. In fact, I presented to the Baltimore Regional Transportation Board these numbers about the percentage of people on the MARC train and how crowded the trains were. And the official answer I got back was, "You're right, but we think we'll get a better return on investment by expanding Interstate 95.
Mm. Go further with that, Otis.
Well, I didn't mean to say that out loud. I guess.
Right.
It's frustrating. It's really frustrating because kind of the roads lobby is significantly stronger than the rail lobby. And I think your last caller and what was just communicated by Chris really just lays out a clear argument why it makes a heck of a lot of sense to invest in rail and to invest in a smart way. As I mentioned earlier, you know, I'm a planner. I love plans. And I think a plan does currently exist that would really get us there as it relates to the MARC system. Governor O'Malley did a MARC growth and investment plan that laid out what we would need to do in terms of new trains, in terms of expansions at rail stations, in terms of actually being able to own and operate it as opposed to being so dependent on Amtrak. But it's not funded, and it's not funded because we have not been as successful as we need to be in lobbying and pushing the legislature to understand that this has to be a priority. If we're talking about Maryland being successful economically, we have to be smarter in terms of how we're investing our tax dollars, and just building more and more roads does not do it for us.
Otis, I have to correct you. It's not a plan. It's a vision, because a plan has to go through a public hearing process. And it's a vision of the MTA. It's not a vision of the Baltimore Regional Transportation Board or the equivalent organization in the Washington area. And so it's really just something on a piece of paper. And while I would love to see it even begin to come into fruition, it's not on the political agenda.
Well, I mean, the problem with that is resources. I mean, I think as Otis is saying, I mean, the Denver system is getting built because the voters agreed to tax themselves, and then they were going to bond that money to be able to do it all at once and then pay it off with the proceeds. And I think they're going back again because of the economic downturn. They're not getting enough as much money as they thought they would from the first referendum, so they're going to the voters again. And those folks have decided, we need this in our region, and that's what we need here in Baltimore. I mean, you got to give credit to the city for saying we need to improve mobility downtown, and we're going to raise the parking tax and to fund it. You know, it's, I mean, it's that kind of will on a more regional scale that we need to really improve mobility here in Baltimore.
Let me reopen the phones here, 410-319-8888. We had a bunch of callers and some, again, walked away. We have to get them on here faster. Just like our transportation system has to move faster, we have to move a little faster to get to the phones at 410-319-8888. And Clarence, you're on the air. Then we'll go to Trinity and Hunt Valley. Clarence, you're on the air.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Hi, Clarence.
Very quickly, in Baltimore City, as far as mass transit is concerned, the plan, the object should be, how do we get buses off of the streets? That's how simple it is. Social Security needs to be connected all the way around downtown, which will alleviate the traffic, some of that rush hour traffic. That's the object, to rush hour, morning and afternoon. How do we get people to use this system, and where is it going? The red line, it basically is, I won't even comment on that. Now, another idea that I've always, every time I drive up 95, up and down 95, I look at that thing and I said, the easiest thing in the world, without probably economically, would be to build the light a rail system dead in the center of 95. It's possible. It all of these things tie into reducing dependency on oil, foreign oil. It's energy efficient. 95 could go all the way. I can't imagine how far it would stretch. And if you look at the center of 95, that would take a lot of traffic off the road.
That's interesting. Talk about that feasibility.
Well, first of all, the red line, you said you weren't going to talk about it, but I will. It's going to take very few buses off of the road. In East Baltimore in particular, it skirts along the waterfront where there's very little transit service right now. And so it doesn't intercept in any kind of a logical, structural way any of the majority of the bus system. And over on the east side, on the west side, it basically just covers the same corridor as the 20 and 23 buses, and it doesn't even do it as well as they do because it doesn't divert over into the Edmondson Village neighborhoods like Wildwood Parkway or out into Catonsville. It doesn't do any of that. The number one thing we can do, it's actually very cheap by transit standards, to intercept buses, to keep them from having to, have excessively long routes, is to have a very short extension of the Metro subway north of Hopkins Hospital, north and east of Hopkins Hospital.
To meet into what?
It would be able to intercept all the buses on Belair Road, Sinclair Lane, Sedonia, everything out to White Marsh, even Harford Road. It would basically do for Northeast Baltimore what Mondawmin does for Northwest Baltimore, and by having two hubs symmetrically located, then you would create a place where the rail system could really serve as the backbone of the entire Baltimore transit system.
And how much would that cost?
Most of that extension would be
above
ground. A
couple hundred million.
It would be above ground. I mean,
yeah, it would almost all be above ground. Instead of $1.8 billion for the Red Line, this would be maybe $200, $300 million.
Except that the problem is, I was involved in this a lot at CPHA, and that has been studied. Jerry's idea has been studied by the MTA as part of a whole bunch of other ideas. I mean, the problem is all these ideas have to come together into something that can actually be built in the real world. And when Jerry's idea has been studied, along with some other ideas that would create an alternative red line, it does not meet the cost-effectiveness standards that the federal government is requiring to use federal funding for transportation projects. That's how the D.C. Metro got funded, two-thirds federal money. There's going to have to be federal money in something that we build here in Baltimore. So, that sounds great when you throw it out on the radio like this, but when you take a look at it...
I'm going to open the phones here because I promised I would, but I want to come back. The question I want to know is the why. I mean, my first jaundiced thought, Dan Pontius, is that just because the federal government said it doesn't work, does that mean it doesn't work?
And the MTA said it won't work.
Does that mean it doesn't work?
Well, not that it
won't
work.
Or does that mean the people who want to make more money at building something else don't want it to work?
It's not that it won't work. It's that in terms of the people that it's going to serve, it's not going to serve as many people for the amount of money that you're spending. That's the calculation.
Let's go back on the phones. 410-319-8888 Trinity in Hunt Valley. You're on the air.
Hi,
Trinity.
I live out in Hunt Valley, like I said. And I actually went up to New York a few weeks ago. And I went with my friend all the way from downtown Manhattan around 34th Street out to Coney Island in Brooklyn. And it only took me about an hour to do that. When I have to go across town, say like to Baltimore City or to White Marsh or a place like that, and I have to rely on the bus system, it takes me about 3.5 hours to make all of my trips. And that doesn't include the waiting around time for the bus. So I'm thinking, if New York can get me across boroughs in an hour, why is it that when I come back home I can't get across town in an hour?
Trinity, I think that that's a very important question. We can turn to our let me start to our two planners first, then our other guests, and Otis and Gerald. Otis?
Well, it doesn't work because it sucks. I mean, it doesn't work because a lack of investment, a lack of leadership. It doesn't work because the majority of the riders are low income, they're transit dependent, and they're persons of color. And so we are not making the investment into the system because of those realities. It doesn't work because it sucks. And the only way it's going to be fixed is if the citizenry says enough is enough. You know, over 30% of the residents in Baltimore do not own cars, right? Which means they're transit dependent. But they're not necessarily white collar. They're not necessarily upper middle class or upperly mobile. And so there is not the attention paid to them or the investment in terms of public dollars into their connectivity. You know, so I think if we want to be like New York, maybe that's not an unfair comparison in terms of population, et cetera, but if we want to be better in terms of our transit, then we have to be serious about it. And during this election year, I think it's an ideal time to really push both the existing leadership as well as the individual who wants to, you know, both Ehrlich and O'Malley, to say, what are we going to do to improve our existing system and how are we going to make it better moving forward? And that means improvements for everyone, both those who are transit dependent and those who are not.
Let me, before I come to Gerald, let me open the go back to phones real fast, because there are a couple of callers on the red line who both called and want to see them at the red line. Let's hear what they have to say at 410-319-8888. And we're going to go, just so you know what we're doing, guys, it's Mike, then Robert, in order that you called in. Mike and Owings Mills, you're on the air.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for calling.
And I wanted to kind of piggyback off of what was said earlier about the red line. I did remember several years ago, I believe in 2002 or 2003, there was a plan to have, you know, a multi-colored, I guess that's the right terminology, transit system, kind of like with D.C. Metro or the Baltimore area, that would have eventually, well, not like anytime soon, but I believe like 25 years or so, almost connected to the D.C. system. I remember that was killed by Governor Ehrlich during that time as well. are there any plans on resurrecting that?
Did we ever get
well,
there?
Well, even if there was, 25 years, whoa.
The original plan, I think, was a development over 40, was it not, for that whole planning process? And the Red Line is supposed to be the first step of that. But the second step of that was supposed to be an extension of the existing subway out to Morgan State. And I think that the MTA has concluded that the amount of tunneling required to do that is not cost effective. The Transit Riders Action Council suggested turning the subway east, as Jerry mentioned, along the Amtrak right-of-way. And when the MTA studied our suggestions, they did not study our suggestions. They took our suggestions and modified it the way they wanted to do it and then studied it and said, oh, it's not cost effective. We feel that they did not study what we suggested. But it's going to be a long time before we see that whole plan implemented.
Well, in terms of the whole plan, I mean, yeah, the idea was to have a new yellow line go north, north-south, to sort of up to Towson through downtown. There you can argue that things are moving too slowly. I mean, if we're really going to have a system, we need to move faster than we are right now, not turn things around. And then, Jerry, just to get back to the extending the metro, I mean, the thing that misses is Fells Point, Canton, and Canton Crossing. That's why you don't get the numbers on that extension, because you're missing those huge population centers and future population centers when you look at Canton Crossing.
Yeah, able to use the concocted population data that they use for the red line.
Well, when you're planning transit, you got to look 30 years out. That's the way planning is done for transit. You're not building transit for next year or 3 years from now. You're building transit for the long-term future, and that development is going to happen, whether Ed Hale does it or not. If that's in the plans, if it's in the zoning for the city, it's going to happen. And are those people going to have a transit alternative or not? I mean, those are the types of questions that have been asked over and over again in this planning process.
Yeah. That's connect the dots transit. That's what that is, basically.
Well, let me go back to the phones here, 410-319-8888. We talk about money a great deal, and we can consider this, though. I mean, if we weren't fighting two wars and we actually taxed wealth in America, maybe we could afford a rail system in America that worked for everybody. 410-319-8888, just throw that little tidbit out. Robert and Edmondson Village are on the air.
Good afternoon, Mark Steiner. Good afternoon,
hi,
everyone.
Robert.
I'm so excited about this topic. Number one, because I have passion for this red line. Not that I want it, but the other way around. And I live in Edmondson Village, and they had these meetings that took place throughout my neighborhood, and they sent out these circulars, and I attended the meeting. And one was at St. Bernardine's Church, and they were giving us all of the pros to why this red line would be beneficial to us. And the number one thing that they kept telling us was that we would be able to get downtown. And one thing I kept stressing to them was, I don't have a problem getting downtown. I don't work downtown. There is no work for me to do downtown, so I have no problem getting there. And I said, the reason why this red line is coming is so that it can serve the people of Columbia, Maryland, and the people who work downtown from Columbia. The eminent domain that's going to take place from rail line alone is enough to take your breath away. And when I was asking these questions, they could not give me these answers. And they kept saying, well, we'll get back to you. We'll get back to you. No one's ever got back to me. In fact, they continue to have these meetings, and I continue to show up, and they stop answering my questions. Overall, the people of Edmondson Village have no idea how bad their lives are about to change. And I kept stressing that point to this consortium of concerned individuals who were overseeing this red line, blase, whatever you want to call it, mm-hmm. And overall no one could answer my question. Why are you putting this red line through my neighborhood so that I can get downtown when I can get in my car or get on the 23 or the 40 or the 20 and be downtown in 10 minutes? It's not plausible to me.
I'm glad you got through, Robert, and this is something earlier the Gerald was saying, and I'd like to since Dan, you've been on this, and Otis, you were, you had something to say about this. I mean, respond to him and tell me what's incorrect about what Robert's saying.
Well, first of all, there is a state law prohibiting any eminent domain, at least in terms of any residential property being taken as a result of building the red line. So that's number one. He's incorrect there.
On the other hand, I believe that law sunsets next year.
That's an important point.
If in fact it does sunset next year, I think the same political animals in terms of the delegates and senators who backed it, as well as the mayor's office, all of which endorsed it, I cannot see any of them not making sure that law goes into effect, throughout the building of the red line. just in terms of the political damage that that would do, this doesn't seem plausible to me.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's something that's been part of every meeting I've been part of on the Red Line. That's been a huge question. And for the longest time, people were very frustrated because they weren't getting an answer. You know, are you going to, how many houses are you going to have to take for this Red Line? And that's something, this compact, Red Line Community Compact between the city and the MTA and a bunch of communities and organizations addressed. And it's something that the state law that Otis cited addressed. And yeah, there's no political support along the Red Line corridor. You know, I mean, the legislators along that corridor whose support is critical if that thing is going to get built are never going to let that happen.
The scenario that I think is most likely is that nothing will be taken for the Red Line, but Edmondson Avenue is going to be reduced from 3 lanes to 2 lanes. And at some point, people are going to say, well, the road's kind of jammed up. We need to expand the road. And then people will say, well, the houses were taken not for the Red Line, but to expand the road. The Red Line, when it takes 1 lane out of each direction of Edmondson Avenue, is going to reduce the capacity of the highway, of the road portion of it, by a third. And the subway out at Owings Mills captures 17% of the morning rush hour traffic inbound along the 795 corridor. The light rail captures 3% of the traffic in the 83 corridor in the Mount Washington area. I don't see
3%.
It may be a little bit higher now, but that was a study that I did. I went out to Mount Washington and counted all the people on the light rail as they went by during rush hour. There's no way in the world that the Red Line is going to capture 30% of the traffic in that corridor to compensate for the loss of the lane.
Yeah, the MTA's own analysis shows that congestion is going to increase significantly along Edmondson Avenue, and it's a real shoehorn job. They're really squeezing it in. Some of those houses are right next to the street as it is, and they're going to reduce the amount of parking. They're going to reduce the number of left-turn lanes. It's a real squeeze play.
You're not going to be able to walk across the street.
Otis?
I'm sorry. I'm a little confused. I don't understand how we can be particularly some of the guests can be in support of transit, but then be nervous that some of the transit may cause congestion. I want your life to be a little bit more difficult if you were choosing to drive instead of using transit, because then maybe you will realize that more investment needs to occur as into transit. It is not a quick and easy route to take in a car in New York, in Boston, in D.C. It makes more sense. You have to get into the on the T or to get into the metro, and we want that same reality to occur here in Baltimore. So you know, I'm not crying any tears that it may result in more congestion. I think it'll be up to us to make sure that we are advocating and to make sure that no one is building, expanding Edmondson Avenue after the Red Line is built.
But I mean, if people maybe, I'll go back to what I said earlier. Keep beating this horse, but. But we didn't say that to the people in Canton. We didn't say that to the people in Fells Point. We said we're going to put it under your road so it doesn't destroy your way of life in Fells Point. We're going to put it under the road, not over the road. I remember that argument took place in this airways
with
leaders of Canton before they made the decision.
There's a whole bunch of people in Canton who are not happy with the current Red Line.
Right. I mean, it doesn't where go, it comes above ground.
It doesn't
where
go,
it comes above ground.
Right.
And we did. It is being a tunnel is being built on Cook Lane where it had to be tunneled. Where it could be above ground on Boston Street in Canton, it is above ground. And where it could be above ground on Edmondson Avenue, it is above ground. And where it needed to be tunneled in a predominantly African-American neighborhood on the west side, Cooks Lane area, it is being tunneled. So I hear what you're saying, Mark, in terms of we need to make sure that there's equity and that there's justice in terms of how this is being built. We're having tunneling on both sides, and where it's appropriate for it to be above ground, it is being built above ground.
Well, let's squeeze one more quick call or thought in here. 410-319-8888. You have like 30 seconds, Greg. You have a positive note. Leave it there. Go ahead. Greg, we have like 30 seconds. Go ahead. Do we have Greg there?
He couldn't think of a positive note.
Well, he was
I guess I wanted to know what you guys thought of the light rail, not the Red Line. I'm sorry. I use the light rail. I love it compared to the bus system, which I didn't like. What do you guys think of the light rail as a transit system?
Very quickly.
Well, the light rail is a line. It's not a system at all. I've ridden it out to Timonium. It works very well for that. On the other hand, I like to bicycle down Howard Street because I'm more likely to run over the light rail in front of me than be run over by the one behind me.
So we need to populate Howard Street. We need to keep Howard Street from being abandoned on both sides as you ride the light rail downtown. If we do that, that single-handedly, I think, will make the light rail appear.
Light
rail was supposed to save Howard Street, but it's been just the opposite. It's been a disaster for Howard Street.
Gerald Neely, Christopher Field, Dan Pontius, Otis Wally, thank you all so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And thank you all for calling in and making the show what it is with your wonderful, interesting thoughts about our transportation system. We'll come back to the subject often because we need to wrestle with it. Stay with us. When we come back, we're going to meet a very interesting woman, Tanya Tall, who has a different idea about how to house the homeless in ways that we're not thinking about in Baltimore City. You stay for that. And then we're going to meet the Beehive Collective, a very group of interesting artists who do some interesting work. We'll introduce them to you when we return. Stay with us. We'll be right back.